Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 22 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. This month, I'm coming to you fresh with a bout of labyrinthitis, which, for those of you who don't know, isn't fun, frankly. it's an inflammation of the inner ear and basically means I've got vertigo and nausea and can't walk without the world shaking. And the floor's coming up to meet me, and getting up and down the stairs is a particular treat. So it's a good job there's no video footage from my house, but I can talk. So the Lesbian Book Club goes on. The show must go on, people. And luckily, I recorded the interview, which is the main part of this podcast, with the fabulous Claire Ashton. That was recorded a couple of weeks ago when I was vertigo and labyrinthitis free. But anyway, we're going to get to the interview with Claire Ashton in a minute. But first, we're going to see what's hot and what's rocking in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as filling you in on what I've been up to over the last month or so and any happenings in the world of lesfic. So first up, the Amazon charts. And as I record this, number one in the US and the UK is Natasha West with her novel Something for the Weekend. This one is based at a teacher's conference where a PE teacher, of course a PE teacher, meets a shy literature teacher, and their world is frankly never the same again. No siree. I'm guessing the PE teacher shows her the ropes or some other similar pun. And if Natasha didn't use that in her novel, what was she thinking? Natasha, you need to do a rewrite. This is Natasha's second hit after The Plus One proved very popular recently. So great to see a new name at the top of the charts. Hooray for her. A not so new name is Harper Bliss, who has another smash hit on her hands with No Strings Attached. This one is the first of a series set around a coffee shop, and who doesn't love a series and coffee? Nobody, that's who. And if you know someone who falls into either one of those camps, you know, you've got to question their ethics and their beliefs in the world. Series and coffee. That's brilliant. Harper's promising more of where this came from, obviously, as it's a series. So watch this space for future books. Also still up there is Becky Chambers with The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet. And that's in the UK charts. And this book, honestly, has been around for a very, very long time, which must mean it's doing something right. So I'm definitely going to put Becky Chambers' book on my list of next reads. Also doing well on both sides of the pond is Giselle Fox, who's had a stormy month with her novel Slow Burn in Tuscany. Now, the cover for this one features a redhead on a bike, which apparently says Tuscany. Now, I went to Tuscany in March, but I didn't see many redheads on bikes, I've got to say. But then again, I was more focusing on the wine and the food and the incredible amount of leather goods for a low, low price. So maybe I just wasn't paying attention, right? But Giselle's book has been glued to the top of the charts, top part of the charts, on both sides of the ponds for quite a bit now. So I'd suggest go and travel around Italy with her and have a lesbian adventure. Why not? In the US, Kristen Conrad's This Is Devon Jones is also doing well with its striking cover, all blood red and ladies with guns. And Melissa Braden's First Position has just popped up in the top five in the US as I record this. Melissa is a long-term favourite with lesbian romance readers, and I'm sure this one's going to be a smash hit as well. It's about ballet, so I think that sort of pulled a few people up, but I'm reliably informed by a few people that have read it that it's a great read, and Melissa knows how to spin a yarn, so I'm sure it is. Robin Rosso's The Boss is also doing well in the US, and this has a figure on it with arms aloft on the cover, although sadly no sign of Bruce Springsteen when I looked at it, so that is always a letdown when a book's called The Boss, right? But if you like a long read, The Boss could be for you, because it proudly proclaims on it, it's, wait for it, 200,000 words long. 200,000 words. That's a lot of words, right? I mean, that's three times a normal lesfic romance. You know, my romances are normally about 70 to 75,000 words. So three books for the price of one. Value for money word-wise is what you're after. This could be the book for you. But 200,000 words, wow. I struggle with books over 100,000 words. I think I'm just trained that way now. So what else is happening in the world since we last met? Well, since the GCLS, it's been a bit quiet in the world of lesfic, I've got to say. All the awards are done and dusted and everybody's gone on holiday. So the world of lesfic is just a lot of writers beavering away in their rooms and their offices, air conditioning on, and if we're lucky, getting off on the odd holiday ourselves, including me. Now, that sounded a bit rude, didn't it? I didn't mean it like that. Since we last spoke, I jetted off to Palma, Mallorca with my wife, and that was tremendous. Sun, sea, sand, and Rioja aplenty, along with an array of good food, which made us very, very happy indeed. I didn't get a tan, but I blame my Irish heritage for that, because, I don't really tan very well. Although I have seen some pictures of me when I was younger over the last few weeks, and I've actually tanned. So it's weird. I've got in my head now, I've got that I don't tan. But I've got pictures of me on holiday when I was like in my teenage years, and I'm actually proper tanned. And I'm going to be posting some of these on my Facebook and Twitter and Instagram feeds for Throwback Thursday. I've got a few pictures down to scan in. So go and have a look at my Facebook and Twitter and Instagram feeds if you want to laugh, because there are some truly awful photos that I'm about to reveal to the world, especially one that I had from when I was about 16. I had a top and it said on it, "I've got beaver fever now." No irony there. I'm sure my family were just having a laugh when I bought that top. Anyway, but in Palma, I did get to wear my summer shoes, which is always pleasing, because every time I wear them in the rain, in the UK, it rains, but not so in Palma, so I broke my hoodoo, which is great. Since we last spoke, I've also released the next book in my All I Want series, All I Want for Summer. This one sees Holly and Tori going down to Brighton for Pride weekend, and all manner of mayhem ensues. Now, if you haven't bought it yet, now's your chance to snap it up. It's out there across all Kindle and iBooks and Barnes & Noble and Kobo and some other places. And if that wasn't enough, if you're in Kindle Unlimited, the box set of the first three books, so that's All I Want for Christmas, Valentine's and Spring, is now in Kindle Unlimited, so you can get that and read it for free, and then by summer. It's a win-win-win, isn't it? And this month, August, I'm spending writing All I Want for Autumn, which is the next book in the series, and that's due out on September the 21st, and everything was scooting along fine until I got my labyrinthitis. So as long as that doesn't knock me off course too much, it will be out then when it's due. I will bring you more updates in the next podcast, so don't miss it. One other thing I've got to let you know about is I will be selling my books at a special indie author book fair in Islington on September the 17th. So if you are around London and you want to come and say hi or get a book, get any of your books signed, come on down to Islington on September the 17th. I'll be posting about it on my blog. I'll be promoting it on Facebook and Twitter and all that. I haven't got the exact address, but keep an eye on this and I'll hopefully get it in to the next podcast beforehand too. Okay, enough about me. Next up, we have my interview with the frankly fantastic Claire Ashton. I hope you enjoy. Joining me today is award-winning author Claire Ashton. Claire is a favourite lesfic author around the world and has so far produced four novels. Her latest, Poppy Jenkins, has spent the last couple of months storming the charts across the globe. Claire also runs the popular UK lesfic blog alongside fellow author Carrie Hunter and lives with her wife Jane and two children. Plus, as an added bonus, she spells her name the right way, Claire without an I. So welcome, Claire.
Indeed. Hello, yes.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much.
Have you had a nice day thus far? Because we are talking at 9 o'clock at night, so you've had a whole day to enjoy the summer day. How's it gone for you?
I've been looking after a feverish boy on the sofa most of the day, so we're both a bit delirious by now, but hopefully coherent enough for questions.
Jolly good, jolly good. Are you doing a bit of reading today?
Only of the internet.
Okay. Good old Facebook, good old Facebook. So paint a picture of me of where you're speaking from today.
I'm in the kitchen, so I might sound a bit echoey. I've actually strewn all the kids' toys on every surface to try and muffle the noise a bit, but
okay.
It's not working at all. So it's a bizarre arrangement, and I don't feel very authory, I'm afraid. that's where I am.
Okay, good. We should have a Skype picture of this, shouldn't we? But never mind. So talking about your authoriness, tell me a bit about your writing journey and how you got started.
I think I started dabbling pretty much after university, just short stories, and then a full-length novel a bit later on, which was a terrible piece of work which won't see the light of day ever again. I lived with a group of blokes and a boyfriend at the time, and none of them were particularly receptive to my stories of strong female characters and the occasional lesbian, and none of them questioned why those lesbians kept cropping up either, but unfortunately at the time, but that became apparent years later. So I kept writing for my own amusement, and it was only years later that I showed a chapter of what I was working on, which was After Mrs. Hamilton, to my wife, who was actually quite surprised. She said, it was like, oh, this is like a real book you can actually write, which was the first really good encouragement I'd had. So I have finished off After Mrs. Hamilton, just a very, very rough first draft, and it was quite a complex story for me to handle at the time. So after that, I tried a simpler tale, which was Penance, and that was the first novel I decided to publish. And then I went back to Mrs. Hamilton and rewrote that. And that's how I'm here.
Okay, cool. So, that's interesting. So you wrote Penance second. Were they released quite soon after each other, or did you take a little bit of time to sort of work on the Mrs. Hamilton?
I did a complete rewrite of that one, so it was probably about a year.
Right, about a year. Right, okay, cool. So let's talk about Poppy Jenkins. She's Welsh, she's wholesome, she's funny, frothy and charming. Your new novel is going down great guns. So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, my background is that I grew up in Wales. It's set in Wales, and I grew up there from the age of 3 or 4 until leaving properly after university. And I've always quite fancied going back there for a story setting.
Mm-hmm.
And after writing That Certain Something, which is a very frothy, light book, I quite fancied something darker, actually. And I had a crime novel in mind originally, which would be set in winter in North Wales with a woman who returns home after 20 years. And it was going to explore themes of home and prejudice and homophobia, internalised as well as from others, and also sort of horrible effects of being closeted. But when it came to it, my heart wasn't in it. So when I thought of Wales, I just wanted to go home to the Wales of my childhood, of, you know, long hot summers and paddling in the rivers and ice cream. So I ended up turning that completely on its head and writing, I suppose, the complete antithesis of that.
Yeah, I would say so.
Poppy Jenkins, this is quite far removed from my original plan. It's light romance and set in summer. It's not written from the prodigal daughter's point of view, but most importantly from a sort of golden character point of view, who's full of love for her home. And it actually still has those themes, original themes, but because it's told from the point of view of such an optimistic, uplifting character that Poppy Jenkins is, I don't think it feels too heavy, and I think they're lightly woven into the story enough that it doesn't detract, only enhances the storyline. I put a lot into it, being set in where my home was, characters, experience, culture, and took my time with it as well. I wanted it to be a sort of deeply satisfying, big-hearted romance. I took the time and fleshed out the characters and the romance, although hopefully adding a bit of spice and levity with the humour.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I would say you've achieved what you set out to do. So bravo.
Oh, good. That's good to hear.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. And it's like you say, it's a really fully formed romance in a family setting as well, with great secondary characters as well as the two leads. Did you enjoy writing the supporting cast as much as the leads? Because I think that came across to me.
Oh, yes, very much. I think that in a traditional romance, that's where you can really bring in some flavour and colour to it. I sometimes you have to play a bit safe with the leads, I think. Mm-hmm. Make sure they're likeable, but at least by the end of the stories. You can't always risk too much with them. But sporting characters, you can really let rip. You can add weird and wonderful characters to your heart's content there. So some of my favourites from this book, for example, were Poppy's serene and ethereal mother who has her head in the clouds most of the day, but then descends with the most poignant and pertinent observation to help put Poppy back on track again. And she was based on a couple of two very kindly intelligent souls who I adored when I was little, so that was lovely to indulge them in the story.
Okay. And what about Di? Is he based on anyone you know?
Yeah, more of a collection of rather lovely blokes and very generous, big-hearted blokes.
Yeah.
Who look big and beefy and terrifying, but yeah, very as meek as lambs.
Yeah, cool.
And Poppy's nine as well. She was based on a few intimidating characters as well. They were very Welsh, sort of matriarchal characters who were very scary when I was little. So again, it was quite interesting to indulge them too.
Yeah, cool. And like you say, you grew up in Wales, so this book, could very much be seen as your love letter to your home. The setting's very real and vibrant throughout. What is it about your country that you so love? And did you have to go back for research?
My parents and a few friends still live there, so no, I didn't have to go back specifically. I was going to go back fairly frequently.
Okay.
But I suppose it's special because it's home. It's the place you know from being a kid. Always have a special place in your heart, I think, hopefully a happy one. And the countryside there is just really ingrained, and I always hanker after rolling hills because of it. And Wales has castles, and there's a bloody awful lot of castles, and mountains, and sublime coasts, and Welsh cakes, and a weird arse national costume, and words like Tup and Achavi, which actually I still use from time to time, much to the confusion of the kids. And those characters, of course.
Mm-hmm.
When I was growing up, there was a mix of lovely people in Mid Wales, from very deeply entrenched Welsh matriarchs and ageing hippies and down-to-earth farmers and artists. And because it's quite sparsely populated, so you get all sorts at the schools. There aren't any private schools particularly near, so you get to know the whole range of characters when you were a kid. And my parents were both teachers, so I think I got to meet a very broad spectrum of people growing up. So it was a very rich background to draw upon for a novel and just to remember.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And also, of course, you've got a cracking football team now as well. So.
Yes,
indeed. Whoever would have thought that? But I think we were all Welsh throughout the European Championship, so that was groovy. And have the Welsh Tourist Board been in touch about the upturns in bookings since the book's release?
No, not yet. But I have had so many comments from people who've really fallen in love with the Mid Wales of the book. And I have to, yeah, I mean, it is that gorgeous, hopefully, that I made it sound, and people really should go. It is a gorgeous place.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of, I think, comments in the reviews and on Facebook, people saying, oh, I've never been to Wales, but you've made me want to go, so that's good. And if not the Welsh Tourist Board, obviously, what about the Breast Appreciation Board, should there be such a thing? Obviously, we should set one up if there's not, but Poppy Jenkins is obsessed with breasts, and I remember you writing this book, and I remember you saying on Facebook that you were coming up with every conceivable term for breasts, and did you do a count up at the end of the book, how many different times they were mentioned?
No, I don't, because it might have been hundreds. I better not. There's every variation of boob, breast, bosom in there, hopefully enough to mix it up a bit, because, yes, she is quite a fixated, isn't she?
She did make me laugh. There's a lot of heaving going on.
Yes.
And you said on Facebook as well recently, you're quite active on Facebook, so you've said on Facebook recently that you got into contact with some old school friends to let them know you'd written a book about a woman who grows up in Wales, comes out later in life and reveals she's held a torch for one of her school friends. So how did that go down, and have any of them thought it was them yet?
Well, I did it very innocently, because I thought, oh, this is such a, there are places, real places like Bellevue, Montgomery, that the Wells is based on, real life places that they'd be familiar with. So I genuinely thought people from school might be interested in having a bit of a peek. So I sent off a message announcing it to them, and then thought, excuse me, oh dear, I haven't seen many since school. And this is all about somebody who came out after school with a big secret passion, and I thought, oh, I really should have thought that through a bit. And the response has been quiet. So I'm not sure what that means.
Are you planning on meeting up with them anytime in the near future?
There is a reunion on the cards. I'll see if I'm invited.
I'm sure they'll all want you to come, because they'll all want to know who it was, obviously. Because everyone always thinks what you write is autobiographical, don't they? So,
Yes. Yeah. Frightening when you write about high-class prostitutes in your other books.
Yeah, we can talk about that later, Claire. Your secret's safe here. No one will talk. And obviously, Poppy Jenkins, it's a family saga as well across the generations, including characters from 11 to in their pension and age. Does it reflect, do you think, where your life's at now with young kids and more inclusive of generations? Could you have seen yourself writing this, say, sort of pre-children?
I think I've always quite liked, the ideas for, after Mrs. Hamilton were written down before I had kids, I suppose. So I think I've always liked having the range of characters, especially kind of older, kindly souls who the heroine can rely on. I think I'm very fond of that kind of character, both male and female. So definitely the older generation, but yeah, probably the kids are going to crop up a bit now, maybe.
No,
I think I've always had an interest in the wider cast of a book. I'd like you said, I do like writing the sporting cast of a book.
Right. Okay. Cool. And this one, like you say, came out nearly 2 years after your last book, That Certain Something. Is that a pace you're going to keep sort of to, or do you think you might speed up perhaps when your children go to school?
Oh, I hope I speed up. You have no idea how I watch you with envy, and people like Jade Winters and Melissa Braden and George Beers producing book after book, and I sit there thinking, what? How did you write so far? Didn't you just publish one? So far I've been restricted to when I write. I'm up at 6 in the morning with the kids, and then it's about 8 or 9 in the evening before they're asleep. So
yeah.
And all the washing up's done, so it doesn't leave a lot of spare time. So yeah, when the kids are both at school, I really hope to write a lot more.
Yeah, cool. I'm sure your fans will be very happy to hear that. So that's cool. And as you said before, your previous book, That Certain Something, was a lovely rom-com, again, jam-packed with British wit and delicious writing. And so obviously your last two books have veered very much into the feel-good camp, whereas your first two were a bit darker. So I was going to say, did you do this intentionally? But as you said at the beginning, maybe it was more where the characters led you?
I generally write what I feel like doing at the time. And yes, the first two were a lot darker. I mean, so I suppose Penance was... when I wrote Penance, I just fancied writing a really suspenseful, atmospheric tale, and wrote that, and that's set in Cornwall, and people seemed to like the atmosphere of that. And then I went back to After Mrs. Hamilton, which had a bit of everything, I think. Mystery, taboos, high-class prostitution. But I actually... did think that had a like romantic side to it. I thought Chloe and Fran's scenes had love and humour in them. It was an unusual romance, but still heartwarming scenes, I thought. So I think that rom-com or light romance side has surfaced before. So, and I am a massive fan of rom-com. There'll be films like Richard Curtis's comedies and When Harry Met Sally and Imagine Me and You. And I adore those and Weak Buckets when I watch them. And of course, Jane Austen will forever be my favourite author. So I don't think the progression maybe isn't as surprising as it seems.
Okay, but do you think we can expect more rom-coms in your future, or do you think the pull of the, as you said, it was going to be sort of a darker tale originally, will grab you?
Yeah, I don't know yet. I'm going to have a big rest over summer when the kids are at home, and then it just might be just whatever appeals, what grabs me after that, so I can't tell yet. Okay. I don't have a plan. I really don't have a plan with writing. my wife probably thinks I do have a plan, but I don't.
It's good to know. And do you know, I still haven't seen Imagine Me and You. I know. I'm a bad lesbian, I know.
I've made up for you. I've watched it millions of times.
Okay. Because is that the one where she is a florist, right?
That's the one, yes.
Yeah, because in my book, This London Love, one of them is a florist, and like the other one's like, well, she can't be a lesbian. How many lesbian florists do you know? And then so many people pointed out to me, have you not seen Imagine Me and You? And I was like, no.
See, you've got to watch it.
I should. So also in your career, you garnered a lot of nominations for your books. You've had a lot of Goldie nominations, Lambda Literary nominations, Rainbow Awards, and your second book, After Mrs. Hamilton, won a Goldie. So what were you doing when you won, and how did you celebrate?
I would have been asleep, I think. I think I remember the phone beeping with messages from America from the awards ceremony, which was lovely, sort of congratulating me, and I probably rolled over and went back to sleep to celebrate because I would have been tired.
Yeah.
I'm always tired with the kids waking me up, so that sounds very mundane, going back to sleep to celebrate, but that's a highlight of my life. It's good sleep, I'm afraid.
And where's the award now?
With a pile of books next to a desk that I write at most of the time, and just to remind me to keep going, because I do get it right sometimes.
Yeah, very good. And you work with your wife, Jane, who's your editor and your cover designer. So how does that go? We work well together?
I think I'm probably her most awkward client. She seems to much prefer working with authors like Kiki Archer, I think. They're far more reasonable. She's such a talented lady. I have learned just to trust her judgment, and but she, as well as doing the sort of copy editing and the cover, she's the one I trust with whether the book's actually good enough to go out or not. She's the one who says, you know, the story's good. She's the one who has the say on that. So it's really good having someone like that to drive nuts with questions.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. And is she your first reader as well?
Yes, usually. Yeah. So, like I say, she's, before anybody else sees it, I really wanted to say whether it's, you know, a good, if does it work, is it a good enough story?
So, yeah. Well done, Jane. Editor and designer. So they're two skills that don't normally mix. So I've always been very impressed with that. And your covers as well, I think, are some of the best out there. So Jane does a great job. And which comes first? Is it the cover or the story?
Story every time. I know a lot of people are inspired by a picture and they always have the cover or the title there first, but I always have the story, and it's usually about halfway through before I think of a title and then start having some ideas for covers, and then Jane will read the first draft and she'll have some much better ideas than I do, and then have a chat about it, and I've learned now after annoying her for years just to let her get on with it. And she gets feedback from those who know far more about these things than me, like my father-in-law's an illustrator, so he has a very good eye for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm so pleased with the cover she's done for the books, every one I think is perfect for the story. Although my favourite is now it's Poppy, because I think it just gives the impression of summer and love and joyful main character. I think it's perfect for the book.
Yeah, I thought that. The colours are very good. And it really stands out on Amazon, which is ace. So, and also I was going to ask you, series are all the rage right now. So have you ever thought of writing one? Or do you think that's something that might happen in the future?
No. No, not at all.
No?
Oh, I take so long to write a book. If I had to spend any more time with my characters, I'd want to kill them, I think. In fact, I nearly did kill off Lucy at the end of Penance because I was getting so hacked off with the book. I don't know. This means I'll probably write a series next, because this is usually what happens when I'm adamant about something to do in writing.
Yeah.
I seem to break my own rule the next moment, like epilogues. I had a big rant at the beta reader who suggested an epilogue for that certain something. Say, I hated epilogues. I'll never have an epilogue. Next book, I've got an epilogue. So look out for a series next.
We'll look forward to that. And can you describe your writing process to me? Do you write better at a certain time of the day, or do you change it up?
I probably do write better at certain times of the day, but I don't usually get much choice. I just write it whenever I can and wherever I am as well. So cafes, in the front of the car, if both of the kids have fallen asleep in the back, and in the garden. But not to be too... time and place, or else I'd never get any done things.
Do you write longhand then?
When I'm doing the first draft, I'm on the computer, but I write reams and reams of notes, sort of scenes and dialogue, big snippets of dialogue. I have notes strewn all around the house, so a mix really.
Okay, cool. And do you have when you're in the writing zone, do you have like a workout for your days, or just as much as you can do?
Oh, God, yeah, no, I'd be too depressing having a word count. And I see the post, it's like seeing the books on Facebook, the word counts are the next worst thing. You know the ones where people say, oh, I didn't have a good day, I only wrote about 5,000 words, or but Andrew Bramble wrote a book in about 8 days.
So did
that's
she?
Quite a word count, like, Jesus. And my writing log would be more along the lines of, scribble down a witty scene, very pleased, pity the kids flushed it down the loo, and that's how my writing
process is. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I've had some good word count days, but there are people that, you know, I listen to some podcasts and they're like, oh yeah, I try and get like 6,000 to 8,000 words a day. I'm like, oh my God. So, do you, and at the end of every book, do you have an idea for the next one? Do you know, or like you say, are you going to spend the summer thinking about that one?
Yeah, I'm just having a good rest. I always, when I have story ideas, I scribble them down. So there's a list of stories that I could pick up, but I usually just go with a story that suddenly forms and I'm keen on. Yes, the most recent idea, when I'm just about to write that, I usually fall in love with and pursue. Because I do find you have to really fall in love with the story to get it done properly. So, it's usually my latest craze when I have some writing time.
Okay, cool. And apart from writing the books, of course, you also run the popular UK Lesfic blog along with Carrie Hunter, which is always a great read and packed with info. So, how did that come about? Because I did ask Carrie, but she was a bit vague.
Oh dear. Well, we're not the best people on recall and memory. She's sleep deprived from shifts, and I'm sleep deprived from young kids. And I'm sure we have sent lots of emails back and forth to each other, you know, organising the blog. And I'm sure most of them are exactly the same, just ask the same old questions back, and neither of us notices. I'm pretty sure. When I started writing, I wondered who else was about. At the time, I was very familiar with books that I read by people like Sarah Waters and Stella Duffy, V.G. Lee, all those people at mainstream publishers, but I thought there must be more than that. Then I discovered Carrie's first novel, Snowbound, and was very excited to find that. And then actually became friends on Facebook and were chatting about sort of lesbian in general and how it seemed it was mainly US authors around on Facebook. So we thought, why not find some other UK writers, stick them on a blog somewhere in a list. It'd be nice to see who's out there. It turns out there's a lot, actually. It was a bit of a shock how much time it took setting up the site. It's settled down a bit now. I think we post every fortnight sort of news articles mm-hmm. and take turns with that. So it's settled down into a nice rhythm and carries fat to work with, of course. And it's great having a chat with new authors and keeping up to date with who's doing what as well and all the good books coming out.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great blog and it's great work that you guys both do, because I remember when I first started finding it was like, oh, wow, that's amazing, all these people are there. So that was really cool. and are you amazed at how big it's grown?
Yeah, I was so surprised how many authors we did find. I mean, once we put the call out to people on Facebook saying, do you know any authors from the UK? There was tons. We had to follow them all up. But yeah, after that initial push, it has settled down, so it's manageable. But mm-hmm. no, I think it's great that there's so much going on now. It's great.
Yeah, no, really cool. So you never stop for news every 2 weeks.
No.
And talking of like Facebook as well, you're quite prolific on Facebook, and you're constantly posting lovely pictures of your gorgeous children. And do you enjoy the social media side of things?
I enjoy Facebook enormously. Actually, I've met so many nice people, readers, authors, all sorts from different countries. It's been wonderful. And I quite enjoy seeing how people's lives are going, from their anniversaries and their new books, or just, you know, pictures from where they live. Hopefully people aren't bored buggerless by the million photos of my kids which I put up. I haven't got the hang of Twitter much. I don't use that so heavily.
Right.
But
cool. No, I don't think anyone's bored of your children yet, so you can keep posting. Like you say, you've been writing for a few years now. What would you say has changed in the world of lesfic, if anything?
A lot more authors, I think. A lot more books. Now self-publishing's kind of people are taking advantage of that, I think. And more publishers, I think. And Bulstrode's increased their list of authors a lot. I think it's quite a good leap of quality in indie books as well. I mean, there's really good quality authors out there, like Ari Bradshaw and Ewan Kiki, all turning out professional books, and I think that's great. Mm-hmm. And hopefully people are picking out their quality writers regardless of whether they're traditionally published or not now. But I think, mainly just a lot more books and choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is great for readers and great for writers as well, because, yeah, it's like there's a lot more opportunity, isn't there, for writers and choice for readers, which is win-win.
Yeah, I hope so. I think it hopefully encourages people to more books they like find to read, hopefully more books they want to read in the future. So.
Mm-hmm. And do you employ any of the modern marketing strategies for your books? You know, advertising, blog tours, videos, that sort of thing?
No, I'm not as good at this publicity lark as saying Kiki Archer or you.
I don't think anyone's... Anyone's got the... I think Kiki wins.
Yes, yeah, she does absolutely win that. I need a bit of a push to shout about my own news to the extent that I'm a bit reticent about adding my own stuff to the UK lesbian blog. It's a bit silly, really. Yeah. I mean, Carrie's the same, actually. She's worse, if anything. She really won't shout about stuff that I'm the one who has to put her stuff in the news and say how amazingly she's doing. I'm muddling along a little bit.
I think you're doing all right though, Claire. You're doing all right. And are you an?
It's going okay.
Yeah, yeah. Are you an avid reader of lesfic as well?
Oh yes, definitely. All kinds. Sarah Waters is probably still my overall favourite, because she has everything in intriguing pace, turn of plots, exquisite prose, the beautifully complex characters. And she's this massive selling author but still writes about flipping lesbians. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's just heaven. And I mean, the UK, I think, it's really lucky. It has other literary writers as well, like Stella Duffy and Catherine Hall, whose last book, The Repercussions, I loved. And then, of course, B.D. Lee's wonderful, poignant, well-observed humour.
Mm-hmm.
And then crime, there's Carrie, and then there's oodles I could authors I mentioned could mention for romance.
Yeah.
Who all give very different strengths, actually. I mean, there's Melissa Braden, who has that lovely, snappy dialogue, and Georgia Beers, who does real but cosy like no other, and Peaky Archer does the laugh out loud. It's,
yeah,
and plenty more. It's, yeah. And Chris Painter does the real angsty gotcha moment where you burst into tears. It's I think it's a good time for romance, actually. Much maligned genre, and people do complain about the quality sometimes, but there's really good variety and good authors out there.
Yeah.
And of course, Nothing to Lose is on my summer reading list as well. I'm looking forward to that.
Hurrah! No, I agree. I think romance is a great time to be a romance reader. So there's a lot to choose. Have you ever been given a piece of writing advice that stayed with you?
I've been given lots. My memory being what it is, I haven't recalled much of it. But maybe I have and taken notice. But I suppose the one I remind myself of most often is you can't please everyone. I mean, for all for the same book, I've had comments to it that it was too slow and too quick and there wasn't enough sex, or there was too much sex, or it was too short or too long. So you'd drive yourself nuts if you try to cater to everyone's tastes, I think. I mean, you've got to listen to feedback, of course, but to have faith in what you're writing and use the feedback to make it that book you want it to be. But, have faith, I think.
Yeah, no, agree with you there. And the final question for you, if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
Oh, no. You can tell that I haven't thought about this. A love child. Maybe not who I'd choose, but maybe Jane Austen and Jilly Cooper might get you halfway there. and I hope I do them proud one day. But
that would.
I'll go with those two.
Okay, I think that would be a page turning book that you would write if you had both their genes in you. So
it does sound good, actually, doesn't it? That should inspire me to the next one.
It does. It's like a bit of romance and a whip or two in there. So,
yeah.
And on that note, well, Claire, thank you very much for taking the time to come onto the podcast. It's been fantastic chatting with you. And I hope you have I hope you have a really relaxing summer as well.
So do I.
Thank you very much.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club, so this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you fancy dipping into any of my books, the All I Want series, Nothing to Lose, the London series or the Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, Barnes & Noble or any of the other digital outlets. I'm also on Twitter at Claire Lydon and I'm on Instagram at ClaireFic. So come on down and follow me there. I'm also on Facebook, Claire Lydon Author, and I believe that is facebook.com/claire.lydon. Thanks to Denise at My Lesbian Radio for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And make sure you tune in to The Lesbian Lounge with Denise for all the latest LGBT news, views, interviews and gossip. Join me next time for more hot book club action, where I'll be interviewing the fabulous G. Benson. See you then.